This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also download over at our website at progressive.org. Today, it's a real pleasure for me to have on the show the one, the only, Phil Donahue, the former pioneering daytime talk show host and short-lived MSNBCer, is the co-director of this year's most powerful film. It's entitled Body of War. It's about one Iraq War vet, and it's also about our political leaders. Phil Donahue, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Pleasure, Matt.
You're not known as a documentary filmmaker. How'd you get into this line of work?
I met Thomas Young he was 24. He's now 28. At Walter Reed Army Medical Center, I was invited to accompany Ralph Nader to visit the room. Thomas's mother had asked to see Ralph. Ralph says to me, "A mother has asked to see me. Do you want to go?" And off we went. I stood next to this young man's bed, and his mother, he was whacked. I mean, I met him. I don't think he met me. He was wall-to-wall morphine. And his mother told me about his injury. Thomas is a T4. So Solder City, back of a 5-ton truck, no top, 26 guys, fish in a barrel. The bullet came down, entered his shoulder, and exited T4, which anatomists know is between the shoulder blades. So Thomas is paralyzed from the nipples down. Thomas can't walk. Thomas can't cough because he can't excite his abdominal muscles. Thomas has urinary tract infection. Thomas has morning nausea every morning. Thomas is a 20-something male, primal life, and he has erectile dysfunction. What's a sacrifice to you? I looked at this young man in this bed with the cheekbones sticking out, and, you know, I mean, the more you think about it, the more it blows you back. And I just think this is the most sanitized war of my lifetime, and we've got this big black hole left by corporate media. We are not seeing the pain. We are not seeing the sacrifices made by thousands of families in this country. And I nominated myself to try to put a little dent in that and had this ridiculous idea of making a movie. And here I am 3.5 years later in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm telling you, this has been quite a ride.
Phil Donahue, why are we not seeing these stories? Why don't we hear about the more than 4,000 soldiers who've died, more than 30,000 soldiers who've been wounded? 30,000 stories out there waiting to be told, and they're not being told.
It just isn't good for business. And Matt, that is to say the television business. You know, our movie has received such wonderful reviews, such wonderful reception from all the festivals that we've been in. People who don't do anybody any favors are crazy about our film. And when Ellen Spiro, my co-director, and I show up for a Q&A, the place is jammed. I mean, it's glorious. And the next night, there are 9 people in the theater. Our movie is not selling popcorn. Our movie is very much a look through the window of the people who make decisions for television. If our movie doesn't draw people, why should a television network show similar material when nobody's going to watch it? That's the canard that is used to explain why we have sanitized this war.
Why won't people go to the movie?
You know, Body of War, I have to tell you, I showed the movie to Sheila Nevins. Sheila Nevins is the grand dame of HBO. You don't get a documentary on HBO unless Sheila Nevins says you do. So here I am with Sheila Nevins in the big screening room at HBO, and the movie plays. And the movie ends, and of course, you know, my heart's going 100 miles an hour. And she turns and she says, well, I wasn't bored. Okay. And then she looked me right in the eye and she said, will people pay $11 to see this? And I thought, you know, that's a little cold. But 3.5 years later, I understand the question.
But I still don't understand, because I watched it on DVD last night at the office of the Progressive magazine on a tiny screen, and it moved me to tears several times. And I would think that millions of Americans would want to see this, both to understand what's going on in Iraq and to figure out how our government lied us into this war, and also just for the knowledge of what's happened to these soldiers, more than 34,000 of them.
I would think so too, Matt. But, you know, Thomas tells this story. Thomas Young is our guy in the wheelchair. Thomas tells me about sitting home watching television, and the whole television screen is filled with flashbulbs and Britney Spears getting in the limo, out of the limo, whatever she's doing. And along the bottom of the screen on the crawl, it says 5 Americans killed yesterday in IED, Baghdad, whatever. We've lost, the American people have lost interest in this war. This war is no longer at the top of our things to worry about.
And this is because of circuses.
Because of what?
Circuses, that people just want to see the circus.
Well, that's a very cold way to put it, but it may be true. I don't, you know, Saul Hurok, the great show business empresario, said it all. He said, if they won't come, you can't make them. And, you know, if I'm about to lose my apartment, my house, if I just graduated from college and I can't find a good job, and I'm a trucker who can't make a dollar, am I going to go and watch an hour and a half movie about a kid who's 24 years old and can't walk? I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to understand this, Matt.
Do the families want to go, the veteran families?
Yes. All of the IVAW people, military families speak out, MFSO, of which Kathy, Thomas's mother, is a member. Military families speak out. But, you know, we showed the film to, we were invited to show the film to the National Press Club. Well, we ran it, and that was that. This movie fell off the marquee in Washington in about 6 minutes. You know, I will say this about the movies, though. The movies are more honest. You can't waterboard a theater owner for not wanting to show a film that he knows will play to empty seats, because Iraq docs are doing that. So, I understand that. So at least that's honest. It's a financial issue. At MSNBC, it was a political issue.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because you were fired from your show on MSNBC in February 2003, just 3 weeks before Bush launched us into this war. Why did they do it?
Well, the most succinct explanation I have for it is revealed in a memo that the New York Times published. Somebody leaked, thank God, somebody leaked this memo to the New York Times, because there's a lot there. The memo was written by a consulting firm hired by NBC News to consult, to tell NBC News what's good programming, what they should cover, who do we like, who's got a high Q rating, someone we like. Donahue did not do well. Donahue, according to the memo, seems to delight in his anti-war position, and this is not going to be competitive, I forget the exact words, against, and these are exact words, the competition which is waving the flag. So there it is. If a president calls a war, corporate media will salute. It just plain will. It'll do it again and again. Being against a war that a president wants to go to is not good for business, period. And the worst thing that can happen to CNN or any of the cable networks is to be called liberal. I mean, they're terrified. The L word kills them. It's amazing. They believe if they are tagged as liberal, it will literally cost them in their stock price, in their profit. That's how we have not only marginalized, but actually made dissent a devil.
I mean, this is the nexus of jingoism and capitalism that allow a president like Bush to launch a country into a illegal war.
It's amazing. It is. And by the way, Congress hasn't fulfilled its constitutional mandate about war since the early 40s. Only Congress can declare war, and Congress doesn't want the job. So they circumvent their mandate and essentially close their eyes, turn their back, and behind their back hand the president a piece of paper which essentially says, here, Mr. President, if you think you have to, go ahead. And then if he does and it doesn't work, they're able to say, well, wait a minute, he said we. It's a cover-your-butt strategy that is making it much easier for America to go to war.
And that comes out loud and clear in the movie Body of War that you are the co-director of, Phil Donahue. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Phil Donahue, of course, is my guest today. One of the things that I liked about the movie so much, other than the incredible emotional tug of this one soldier and his story, and his mom is great and his wife is poignant, is this notion of accountability. That finally, you have accountability in this movie because you do a roll call that goes all the way through the movie of the senators and how they are voting. And you run the roll call. And you see some heroes. Some people who did stand up, 23 senators who voted against the war. You see the leader of this heroic 23, as he himself calls it, Robert Byrd. He is waving the Constitution around, and he is telling his fellow senators that they are abdicating their responsibilities. But there are also some people you wouldn't expect went along with this war. Were you surprised by any of those?
I thought we might get Hagel to vote no. There are others that won't come to me now.
Well, you know who looked bad to me?
By the way, we should say, Matt, there were 133 members of the House who voted no. 133 members of the House, as you mentioned, 23 members of the Senate. A resolution to go to invade Iraq passed by a wide margin.
The person who jumped to my mind was John Kerry. I had forgotten how terrible John Kerry was in the lead up to this war.
And Hillary.
I knew about Hillary and her distortions after the fact that she didn't know what she was doing. The clip you show from her leaves little doubt that she knew exactly what she was doing. Yeah. And Tom Harkin was a name. We didn't see the face. I was surprised he voted for the war, too. Tom Harkin, the great senator from Iowa. But so to see this was the first really taste of accountability I'd seen. Of course, you hold Bush accountable, too, because you show his ridiculous statements and the really outrageous lies repeated one senator after another, one Republican talking point after another in the same words.
They read them. They read them. By the way, Tim Russert asked John Kerry on Meet the Press, are you sorry you voted for the war? And Kerry looked at Russert and he said, profoundly. It is true. After John Kerry.
Harkin,
you said
Tom
you were
Harkin.
Surprised. Harkin was a surprise. There's some surprise no votes in there, too. You know, Conrad, people that, we knew Wyden. We knew Wellstone. May he rest.
It was nice to see Wellstone in there.
Yeah. you know, it's important to know what it took to stand up in that environment and look the lion in the jaw and say no 3 weeks before an election to a war that it sounded like the whole nation and entire by the way, the president said you can't take pictures of the coffins, and the whole press corps said okay. So there's been no blowback at all. There's been no aggressive.
Why no accountability for Bush?
Boy, isn't, you know, I'm doing Q&As all over the country with this movie. I'm getting out of the house pretty good here. And in every Q&A, someone will stand and say, why don't we impeach him? Well, I very foolishly allowed myself to say, you know, ma'am, first of all, you don't have time. Second of all, you will triple the audience of all the shout shows on cable. They love this. You will look like an anarchist distracting a troubled president while he's at war, and McCain will walk into the White House in January. And when I finish my speech, they are all ready to waterboard me. There are people who are in a heartfelt way, invested in impeachment. They can't understand why it doesn't happen now. This is clearly a president who has turned his back on the Constitution. These are high crimes and misdemeanors. We already have more than 4,000 Americans dead. What does it take? We put people in cages for 5 years. We've going through people's email. We're listening in on their phone calls. There's no habeas corpus. And you don't want to impeach this president? And I mean, I didn't realize what a powerful and emotional issue this is. But I'm sorry, I can't sign off on something that's going to provide theatrics, sparks, and set those who promote it up for a huge and devastating attack by the people who think that dissent is un-American.
Well, I disagree. I mean, I've been one of those impeachment.
Well, please make your case.
People, just because I think there needs to be accountability. I think, you know, when someone so flagrantly violates the law as Bush has with the Iraq War, with the domestic spying, with mm-hmm. the corruption of the Justice Department, and the mm-hmm. other things that he's done.
Have you got a Senate that would convict him?
I don't. No, he wouldn't be convicted. He wouldn't be thrown out of office. But I just want the House Judiciary Committee, John Conyers, to hold hearings and say, you know, I was awake here. We were awake here. We're not going to let history down here and abdicate our responsibilities once more.
Mm-hmm. I can't get all uppity about opposing your view. I understand it. I just... maybe I'm prejudiced. You know, I mean, the Republicans brought this nation to a halt for 2 years while we looked up a dress, spending $90 million of the people's money. You know, are we going to, you know, maybe that's my problem. I think of the absurdity of these righteous brothers, you know, monogamous all, marching from the House over to the Senate. Oh, please, sit down.
But there's maybe a huge difference between lying about sex and lying a country into war, though.
I'll say there is. Yeah. There's a big difference. And absolutely so. So you want to spin all these wheels, and you know that you're not going to get a conviction.
Yeah, I just think it needs to be out there. Okay. But anyway, that's me.
All right.
Now, one of the reasons you're not on the impeachment bandwagon is because of its political effect that it would have in this election year, it sounds like. And so I'm wondering, what do you make of Obama?
Well, I'm like everyone else. I'm excited by this moment. I'm breathless for him to occupy the Oval Office. I think it's the best chance we have to end this war the soonest. And I pray for a successful 4 years. I just can't believe that Obama will lose this November. And that's another observation that makes everybody crazy, because they're not at all as confident as I am, and maybe I shouldn't be.
But well, I you know, here again, I'm not as confident as you are, because I worry, you know, I think basically it comes down to racism and how racist the American public is at this stage. Now, you know, you've been talking to the American public for 40 years, and you probably have a better read on this than I do, but, you know, I've encountered decent, liberal, elderly people who tell me they can't vote Democratic for the first time in their lives, and they don't have a coherent answer except they blurt out right away that race has nothing to do with it. And so that tells me something, and I worry about that. How do you weigh that?
I do too, Matt. I'm not cavalier about this at all. Racism lives. We're not sure how it will express itself in this this November. But I am impressed with the Bobby Kennedy-like following that he has. And these are young people who are not as influenced by the old racist fears that people my age grew up with. But it is, I have to acknowledge, this is hardly a shoe-in. But I think these poll numbers are going to, I think they're going to, we're going to widen out again, and I feel it's also true that as we get closer to the election, the tradition has been, oh, it's close, we're almost a tie. It's almost like the media creates this excitement because it boosts
they gin it up for ratings.
If we think it's close, we'll watch. So I don't know who to blame, but I don't believe in conspiracy theories, and I just don't believe people are going to vote for four more years of Bush.
The other thing that worries me is the power, the still lingering power of the far-right evangelicals in this country. And they got one of their own as the vice presidential nominee. Yes. What was your reaction to Sarah Palin's choice?
You know, this is a great story. This is a holy blank story as defined by Bob Woodward. I mean, we've had grown men spend millions and millions of dollars seeking this high office, or failing the president, certainly the vice president, spent years in the Senate, Joe Biden, 36 years. People labor in the fields. They go to meetings. They speak to empty chairs year after year after year. They go house to house. They put signs up. And all of a sudden, a woman comes out from behind a tree carrying a gun, and she's going to be one 72-year-old heartbeat away from the presidency. I mean, what's a story to you? This is a fabulous story. I can't tell you. It's the best thing that's happened to media in this entire campaign. And the cynical part of it is somebody in the Republican ranks was smart enough to know that this would be the case. And so we've got Annie Oakley here, and she's fabulous. She looks great. She's got a beautiful family. And apparently she can skin a moose. I don't know. So we're going to see, but I'm afraid it's a harbinger of what's happened to our presidential process here. We're looking for theatrical excitement rather than examining a person's position on issues and the thoughts about the future. This wasn't, you know, this, I mean, it's almost a joke. Governor Palin? Yeah, let's give her a call. Why don't you call her, Bob, see if she's home? You want to be vice president? Kaboom! There she is, being screamed at by thousands of exultant evangelicals on the floor of the Republican convention. Wow, this is a story.
I'm speaking with Phil Donahue, who, of course, I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to a Progressive Radio. You mentioned Ralph Nader earlier on, and he isn't exactly the most theatrical person in the world, but he does raise substantive issues. And I know you were a supporter of Ralph Nader's back in 2000, Phil, and I don't think you were in 2004. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm wondering where you are on Ralph Nader's campaign this year.
I'm very conflicted. I was on the campaign bus in 2000. By the way, it's where I met Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam. I ran into him a little over a year ago, and I said, Eddie, I'm doing an anti-Iraq war documentary. He says, you want a song? And I grabbed him. He comes to my house a couple of weeks later. I show him a very loose assembly of the film. He goes home, calls Thomas, talks to him for an hour. And in 4 days, in an MP3 file, I had the signature song for our film for free. Now, that was just one of the breaks I had. Ralph Nader. I was not on the Nader bus in 04 to save my marriage. I got off the Nader bus. But I'm not at all comfortable with that decision. You know, the people who admire Ralph the most are the people who most breathlessly ran after him and begged him not to run. What's wrong with this picture? The issue isn't Ralph, it's our system. Ralph's railing against the two-party system, the corporate parties who decide who gets on the debates, the greatest usurpation of the people's right in the history of presidential politics. We have Anheuser-Busch sponsoring the debates, U.S. Airways. Corporations are deciding who gets on that stage. And if you're not on that stage, you're not a serious candidate. And you can imagine how much these corporations want Ralph Nader on that stage. So I'm still conflicted about Ralph. I was an early supporter of Ralph, and I go back to the 60s. I couldn't get over this guy. I was awed by what he knew, what he said. He was on the Donahue Show more than any other single person in the 29 years we were on the air. And in every case, he drew a crowd. People watched it because they knew he had something to say that was important to them. And here I am now, not supporting him for president. Man, I don't get it. What's wrong with this? Why should it be this way?
I used to work for Ralph Nader, and it is that is a tough choice we have, those of us who know him and admire him for all that he's done for this country. We just have a little less than a minute left. What's next for you, Phil Donahue?
Well, we're still promoting our film. Obviously, you know, that's why I'm here. I mean, it's thrilling for us to. We want people to see this film, not surprisingly. You do a painting, you want people to see it.
And the word of mouth should really spread on this film, Body of War. It is an astonishingly powerful and important film. How do people see it?
Well, distributed. We never had a distributor. No distributor would take our film. And so Landmark Theaters rolled us out. And so we did have a chance to tap dance and find out if people would throw pennies, as I've come to say. We didn't have a corporate budget. We had no full-page ads. So there were a lot of people who didn't even know it was out there. We are on DVD, and the sale will begin on the DVD this October.
And is there a website they can go to? Or?
Yes, bodyofwar.com is our website. Tells you everything you want to know, including how to stop this war. We have a 12-step program. So we're pleased to welcome people at our website, bodyofwar.com.
That's unfortunately going to be all we have time for. Phil Donahue, it's a real pleasure to see you again and to have you on the show.
My pleasure, Matt. Nice seeing you again as well.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.